Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, the 6th of May, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad you're here with me today. Also with me today, I would say to tell you that you're wrong, but I'm not sure we have that kind of disagreement today. I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
I would never tell John he's wrong.
Until he's wrong.
I'm wrong a lot.
That's true.
Never. Wait, now I'm telling you you're wrong for not. Oh, anyway. To the topic.
I see what happened there. Charlotte, I actually do want to start with you. You had linked out to an interesting article about ARM processors. We've talked a lot about the validity of Apple's presumptive decision to put these into laptops, but we haven't really talked about why that matters.
Right. So, I like you, I'd read bits about this. I've been part of, you heard discussions about it and so on. For me, the default understanding was basically Apple wants to make its own chips because Apple likes control. And it's a really excellent article on iMore actually kind of outlined that. But also it outlined a lot of other things about how, you know, what ARM chips really are, how they are made, what the instruction kits are, and all those kind of things that I'd never really particularly thought about or got my head around. And it was just a really good explainer about why what is going to be quite a significant change in Macs is going to happen.
Now, John, you're sort of our go-to chip technology discusser. So whenever we have things to say about...
That's his official title.
It is. It's printed on his business card.
Senior sidewalk science correspondent?
No.
I wish I could be one of those.
I will find you a senior correspondent title for TDO very soon. But for right now, you are the senior processing correspondent for TDO. And I want to know, aside from the shift in Apple ostensibly bringing this stuff in-house, why would it matter that the architecture of the chips themselves is different than it is already currently with what they're getting from Intel?
I can tell you a little bit about that. So
this is why you're our senior processing correspondent.
ARM is a double acronym. ARM stands for Advanced RISC Machine.
And RISC stands for?
In the middle, it's RISC, which is itself an acronym for Reduced Instruction Set Computer. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, at Stanford and elsewhere, there came to be this idea that you could alter the complexity of the instruction set. You imagine an instruction set on a CPU that can only do, say, for example, additions and multiplications and fetches from memory. That's a pretty simple instruction set. Or you could have more complex instructions that say, you know, I'm going to do something more sophisticated. I'm going to do a sign, and I'll represent it as a Taylor series, and I'll instantiate in the silicon the series expansion of the sign, and I'll have a long series of instructions that are embedded into the hardware to do this kind of function. So you can have what's called a CISC in contrast to RISC, which is complex instruction set computer. Mm-hmm. Well, RISC really took off in the late 80s, early 90s, and became a big thing, and Digital Equipment Corporation was into it with their RISC chips, and MIPS was one of those. And the theory goes like this. You can have a CPU with simple instructions, and you have to run a whole lot of them to get a job done. Mm-hmm. Or you can have a CPU with complex instructions, and you only have to run a few instructions to get some work done. And as the theory went, it was more efficient and faster to run more instructions at a higher rate than it was to run complex instructions, which in addition, used up the transistor count.
Okay.
And made the CPU die more complicated. And so RISC was really the rage in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But then Intel got kind of smart about building CPUs, and they continued down the road of CISC, complex instructions, and they did that out throughout the years. And RISC kind of died away as a thing in the early aughts, 2000s. Mm-hmm. But the ARM processor did not. the ARM technology from ARM Holdings in the UK, continued to pursue the technology.
Okay.
And the ARM architecture is licensed out to anybody who wants to use it, and Apple does it. And so they instantiate the instruction set on custom chips under license from ARM Holdings.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the advantages of RISC is that you can simplify the instructions, and so you can simplify the layout of the processor, and you can make the transistors smaller, and so that means lower power. Ta-da! And that's why Apple was interested in RISC for the iPhone and for the iPad, because they wanted a low-power mobile processor. Remember the Intel Atom chip?
Yeah.
That was Intel's answer to mobile computing, but it was god-awful hungry in power consumption, and Apple didn't want to use that.
Yeah.
Other companies did. So the RISC architecture affords for a simpler design, smaller artifacts. Now, you'll hear this term called process, like nanometer-sized process. Mm-hmm. What this means is this, roughly, it's got multiple interpretations, but roughly the size of the transistor. So when you hear 10 nanometers process, what it means is that if you took an electron microscope and looked at the die, you'd see transistors that were approximately 10 nanometers in size. A nanometer is a billionth of a meter or a millionth of a millimeter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
that's the history of why Apple chose ARM. Low power consumption, high speed performance, more scalable, better for mobile processors.
Why the
instruction
we think
cells itself.
Why we think they did, or why we think they will.
Well, yeah, it's pretty sure.
Yeah.
The question.
But nothing is known until Apple announces it. So we're all, I know it's pretty solid based speculation. I would write it in pen, maybe not in Sharpie, but in pen. if I were writing this prediction down.
We know the advantages of RISC in terms of low power.
The big thing is power consumption, because we know Apple is always optimizing for battery, for power, for the life of a device before you have to plug it in again.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's why they developed that sliced battery for the teardrop, the ramp-shaped laptop. Yeah.
They worked their way from 45 nanometers in the A4 down to something like 7 nanometers in the A13.
Wow.
There was a time when scientists thought that anything below 20 nanometers would cause quantum problems, where there would be crosstalk between traces, and you'd have quantum mechanical effects.
Okay.
Apparently, the TSMC has solved that problem, and they're continuing even smaller. I think the A14 is going to be 5 nanometer process size. And that's something that Intel got roadblocked on. Remember the old faded Cannon Lake, where they were trying to get to 10 nanometers, and they had to kind of start all over again to try to get to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So the complex instruction set does have its disadvantages and may have finally caused difficulties for Intel. And Apple knowing that, and knowing that you can't get down to the low power and low process sizes with CISC, wisely decided that they were going to abandon Intel. And then there's all the political reasons that Charlotte talked about, having control over
the
timing of the release of the product, and control over the architecture of the chip in marriage with the operating system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the bit I kind of... First of all, I wanted the explanation that John gave us, which is fascinating to listen to the kind of actual technical reasons, because clearly this is a two-pronged reason for Apple doing this.
Sure.
Like, it's not for one or the other. They want both all the technical advantages that John has outlined, but also there is surely a political, we could call it, kind of business focused, whatever way you want to,
business,
you know,
reasons aside from technological reasons,
controlling the stack, whatever way you want to just define it. Apple is a
company. And we know Apple's had serious trouble over the years timing their product releases with Intel's chip releases.
Right.
Clearly a lot of this is about control, you know, having the architecture do exactly what you want it to do, being able to release products, as you say, when you want to do it. You know, it even things like reducing perhaps potential product leaks. If you're bringing more and more as close to in-house as possible, mm-hmm. it reduces the kind of leak points or break points in the logistics and the supply chain. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different elements. I can see why Apple wants to bring this, you know, in-house, never mind what it will do to potential new computers.
Right. Now, even though these risks are reduced instruction set and are simpler, they still do SIMD, which is single instruction, multiple data, which is what we call a vector processor. And that's very important in certain mathematical calculations and the graphics operations, where you can operate with one instruction, you can operate. Suppose you have a vector with a million elements in it and you want to add one to each one. You can do that in one instruction with SIMD. So you can do that. And I imagine if you can do that in RISC, you can do anything you want in terms of maybe x86 instruction translation and silicon.
Which would help make the transition to ARM processors easier.
You'd still be able to run x86 software.
One of the things I want to point out is that ARM processors, as John talked about, you know, like talked about them in very real terms, they are a thing that actually exists. There are ARM processor, like the iPhone has an ARM chip in it. So does the iPod, for that matter. Nintendo Switch and the Nintendo 3DS, those are computing devices with ARM chips in them. The Chromebook has it. The Surface, the Microsoft Surface, has an ARM chip in it.
Oh, ARM is everywhere.
Like it's not uncommon at all. If you have a TomTom navigation device, it's an ARM chip. These, like the Raspberry Pi, is powered by an ARM chip. Those little credit card computers, you know, you get for $40 and run something at your house. I have like two or three of them here. Those are all things that are ARM, that contain an ARM processor that was developed by somebody. Like obviously, Nintendo's not using the same one as Apple, as Microsoft, you know, because they've all built their own, and so building one to go to a laptop is no great leap of logic there. It's part of, like, is where I'm getting with this. Like, there are lots of places that are using them effectively to do all kinds of things now. Like, Canon PowerShot digital cameras have ARM processors in them, according to this Wikipedia article that will be in the show notes. So there's no reason to think that if Apple didn't believe they could get better performance and better power management and better control over the process, those are all really compelling things, and we've spent a little bit of time explaining some of those advantages, which is part of what I was hoping to do. So
I hope this is not throwing a grenade in as we kind of wind down the show and, you know, get through another day and so on.
Pull the pin, here we go,
stand well back. What, given how many devices already use ARM chips, given that Apple uses them at some of its devices already, is there a reason that I don't know or can't see that they are not already in newer Macs?
I'm going to take a shot at this, and then John can come in after me and correct all the stuff that I get wrong.
Right.
but this is my chance to see if this is what I understand. So if the processor is different, then on a fundamental level, the operating system software has to interact with that hardware in a very particular way in order to make everything work the way that it should. So it's the same reason you sort of can't install macOS on a phone or things like that, is because the hardware and the software are tied together very closely.
Make a hack and phone now.
So I think part of the reason is because like this is what John was sort of alluding to with x86 instruction sets. Having the bandwidth to do something like that would make it very helpful to ease the transition off of Intel chips onto something Apple makes proprietarily. That way, like, you know, people who build apps for macOS don't have to worry about having to write all new ways of interacting with the operating system, because the operating system is different in all these other ways. And so it would, at least in the short term, it would give us an emulation layer to get everybody an opportunity, some sort of breathing room to update, so that if there is something that you need that has to interact with the hardware or interacts with the operating system software on a low enough level, that you get the opportunity to do that. And it's not just everybody goes out and buys a new computer and now everything is broken. Like when we had the transition from OS 9 to OS 10, when we had the transition from PowerPC to Intel, ages ago in the first place.
Binaries?
I do remember those because they had to run on a 68K processor and a PowerPC processor.
You have to do some pretty sophisticated computer science stuff with your operating system and your hardware to be able to detect and execute a FAT binary properly.
A FAT binary contained two different versions of the same app, like a 32-bit and a 64-bit, right, so to speak.
For each different architecture.
Right, and it was all kind of in one place so that you didn't have to know which one you had in order to download the application and run it on your computer.
To make all that work takes a lot of time, and that's probably why we haven't seen ARM. There was two things. Making it all work and making it all work perfectly and reliably, and two, waiting for the ARM processors like the A14 to really equal the power of the Comet-like chips that we're seeing in the new MacBook Pros.
Yeah, getting enough horsepower to make it a processor that could power a laptop is also
those were the two things I think we were waiting for. Yeah,
I think so too. So, Charlotte, did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it all makes total sense. And a lot of the stuff I've read already does indicate the kind of making sure that it can power not just an iPhone or even an iPad, but, a MacBook Pro.
Not if, but when. So, John, how much of that was wrong?
None.
All right. See, this is what happens. What? I know this guy and I have him on my podcast and he explains all this stuff to me and I try to pay attention and then some of it sinks in and then I can talk about it like I actually know what I'm saying.
Wait, none of it was wrong?
None.
Wow.
I'm so glad I have that on tape.
Kelly's so smart.
That's my new text tone. Thank you. I'm really interested in this, and I'm really interested in how Apple's going to handle the transition. Because Apple's, like I mentioned, from OS 9 to Mac OS 10 was one kind of transition. From PowerPC to Intel was another kind of transition. I want to know how this one goes because I'm really curious how it's going to be handled. We've had a couple of, like the APFS transition that seemed mostly to go okay. Like getting a lot of people onto a new file system is really hard and it mostly went okay. There's a whole conversation to be had about that. There's a little asterisk there. The 32-bit apocalypse, most people seem to have come through that all right. So it seems like Apple's really good at handling these transitions and I'm very curious to see how the ARM transition on Macs is going to end up going, whether those are MacBooks or Mac Minis or whatever they end up being.
We know that Apple attends to the details. Mm-hmm. We know that Apple's very focused on the ease of use and it just works kind of mentality. So my expectation is that all this time we've been hearing these rumors, Apple's been working on it really hard on making it just work.
Mm-hmm. And that's my hope, is that it ends up being very smooth and that the sticking points are things like, I use this app all the time and it's not an active development anymore, and that it's going to be more that sort of thing that causes people trouble and not, I upgraded my computer and everything is terrible. Because I know Apple doesn't want that. So I'm hoping that it ends up being those sort of smaller scale issues and not something massive. And hopefully avoiding the massive issues is why we haven't seen it yet, like you were saying. So, yeah. John, we're going to go ahead and call it there for today. If you have more questions about this, like I said, I know a guy and I can get him on my podcast. So you should totally email observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter and you can leave us comments in the show notes. John, thank you again for being here today. And thank you for coming by every time I'm like, let's talk about processors.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
All right. Charlotte, as always, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. And thanks for the explanations, John. Bye, John.
You're welcome. Bye, Charlotte.
Super duper great. So I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.